I'm Derek Russell.
And I'm Brad Locke, and this is The Memo,
a gathering of all things Northeast Mississippi, brought to you by The Daily Journal and DJournal.com. Hey everybody, welcome to The Memo. It is Friday. How's everybody doing today?
Whoa, you just jumped right in and took the intro there, didn't you?
What? Just kind of throw you off guard. Got to keep you on your toes.
That's fine.
Like the ghosts do in your home.
Yes, the ghosts.
Yes, the ghosts. I'm Derek. That's Brad. There's Chris Kiefer.
Morning. Any more ghost sightings?
No, although this reminds me, I've been hearing a lot of buzz about this movie called, it's called A Ghost Story.
Oh, don't, so that's what my column's about today.
There you go.
As a matter of fact, you won't be seeing it here.
Apparently not.
Yeah.
I watched the trailer.
You retweeted my tweet. That's where
I did.
You saw
and
that.
Then I went and watched the trailer. It looks pretty fascinating.
It is. It's very fascinating. You will not be able to find it anywhere around here.
At first, I thought it was going to be a comedy because, you know, it's a guy with a sheet on his head.
No.
But no, it's not. And
for people who are not familiar.
A guy dies. Casey Affleck plays that happens in the beginning of the movie. I don't think that's a spoiler alert that he's walking around under a sheet for the rest of the movie.
Yeah,
and goes back to look after his wife as a ghost, but because he's a ghost, he's unhinged to time, so he kind of drifts through time. It's very fascinating.
Hmm. Yeah, and then the sheet over the head is like a basic thing, but at least in the previews,
so
it kind of works.
Like effective looking.
It is.
Yeah, but you know, Planet War for the Planet of the Apes is only on 18 screens,
so that's fine.
We'll be fine.
12th installment of the Planet of the Apes?
Well, it's the third in the new. It's the trilogy. Third in the new trilogy,
really?
And supposedly the last one.
It seems like at least the fourth.
It's the third now of the original eight.
Eight.
I don't remember how many there were back in the 70s. And then, you know, Tim Burton tried to redo it, like, in 2001.
Really?
He remade Planet of the Apes, and it was terrible.
I've totally forgotten about that one.
Yeah. Marky Mark was in it.
Oh, well, there you go.
Very forgettable. Was it Marky Mark?
Marky Mark. Who is that? Young kids listening to this podcast. Who's Marky Mark?
Emma comes in. Who's Marky Mark? 2001. Who was in that? Was it Marky Mark?
Hey, whatever happened to the Funky Bunch? Mark Wahlberg, I used to like him as an actor.
Uh-huh.
Not so much.
Yeah, it was Marky Mark.
Because he keeps choosing terrible roles.
Mark Wahlberg, Tim Roth, Helena Bonham Carter, Michael Clark Duncan, Paul Giamatti.
That's a good cast.
Was not a good movie.
No.
You don't even remember that it was a thing.
I don't.
Yeah. 2001.
Well, nobody bets 1,000. Tim Burton's got more good ones than bad ones.
This is true. There was supposed to be a sequel, Return of the Apes, which would have starred Arnold Schwarzenegger, but did not happen.
Nice.
Because it was so bad. You know, the ending of that original is so iconic, with coming up on the Statue of Liberty and him and Charlton Heston realizing that he's been on Earth, you know, the whole time. He's been trying to get off the planet and realizes he's on... Spoiler alert. Sorry for...
I haven't seen it.
Oh.
I've seen parts of it, just not the ending.
Well, we're going back to 1968 spoilers here.
Yeah,
well, you know, Charlton Heston's an astronaut.
It's been 50 years, if I haven't seen it by now.
He thinks he's on this other planet, and he's trying to get off. The whole time he's trying to get off to Earth, and then he rounds this corner of a beach at one point, and the Statue of Liberty's sticking up out of the ocean. He realizes
the apes have taken over.
He's in the future, yeah, so that's what happened. Anyway, at the end of this one... I forget exactly how it happened, but like history was changed at some point. And so he's in D.C. He's in Washington, D.C. and running through the monuments, and he passes the Lincoln Memorial, and Lincoln's an ape. And that's how it ended.
This is the Tim Burton one.
This is the Tim Burton one.
Lincoln's an ape.
So
what the heck?
There's your movie review for today, folks. Scott need not come on.
Yeah, that's right.
So,
but Scott will be here.
He will. He'll be discussing Spider-Man.
And
which is also in like six screens, right? Actually, it was when it opened. It's only in four now.
I've heard it's pretty good, though. So
it is. It is good. You know, the restrictions were lifted back at the end of last summer to where competing theaters could now show the same movie.
Right.
Within a geographical location to each other.
Right.
Proximity. And so now you get movies like Spider-Man that are both at here in Tupelo, at Cinemark, and at Malco, taking up one screen for 2D and one screen for 3D.
Yeah.
So...
Well, we'll also have Jenna on here to talk food. You'll talk entertainment. And we had to push Thomas Wells, his interview from Wednesday to today. So we'll have him on as well to talk about his In Focus photo essay.
Mm-hmm.
So, what you looking at, Chief, on your phone?
I had a text.
No time for texting. We're Sorry. Doing a podcast.
It was
here.
From a source. Does that count?
A source.
I have somewhere Breaking to be news. In a little while. Yes. Okay. Children at camp. Film at 11. Are they being held against their will? Find out tonight.
No, they're not.
No, but no,
with
no,
all
no,
the
we're
tease
not.
With
yeah,
that headline.
Yeah. Made you want to read the story, though, didn't it? All right, let's get started.
Okay. We're joined now by Jenna Parsons, food editor, among other duties. Jenna, how are you doing?
Good. How are you, Brad?
I'm all right. Welcome back. Several things to talk about today. For one, let's start with this Boy Scout cookbook. This is a pretty cool story. This kid, he's going to be a freshman this year in high school. His name is Lincoln Jones.
Right.
And he, you know, as part of earning one of his badges, he learned how to cook, and he went, I guess, beyond what he had to and made a cookbook.
Well, he comes by it naturally. His dad, Wesley, was one of the first cooks of the week I did in 2002.
Oh, cool.
Then a few years later, I interviewed his mom as a cook of the week, and then I've interviewed her since. She has a blog, Call Me PMAC. It's Paula Jones. And so I don't think Lincoln had a choice. I think, you know, when you're raised by two foodies, you learn to cook. But he actually started cooking because he's a really picky eater.
Yeah.
And so he knew if he cooked it, he would eat it. And so that's what put him in the kitchen. But he realized all these campouts that the boys would go on,
yeah,
and they'd have to make breakfast, lunch, and dinner,
mm-hmm,
and they were eating the same things. They were eating hot dogs, and they were eating hamburgers. So he decided to gather some recipes and put them together for all different types of campouts, backpacking and hiking, and when they set up for a heavy camp where they can take a grill,
yeah,
so or a camp stove.
Yeah, and he's learned different kinds of cooking, like cooking with a mess kit, grilling, baking, using a Dutch oven. I mean, he's...
Yes, and the Dutch oven I found interesting. In the Scout, in the merit badge for the cooking, you learn how many charcoal briquettes it takes to get the Dutch oven to different temperatures. So one of the recipes he gave us was for a Dutch oven pizza, and it says to cook it at 450 degrees. So you look in that... those, I guess, the badge requirements,
yeah,
and it tells you how many briquettes it takes to get to 450 degrees.
Huh, well, that's cool.
I didn't know that.
I didn't either. Of course, I don't cook. This breakfast sandwich of his looks delicious. Was that eggs, bacon?
This is eggs and bacon and Texas toast, but the original recipe calls for bacon and hash browns.
Ooh.
And Texas toast. And he said you can substitute an egg, but real men, this is what he says, real men eat it with the hash browns. But I think they made it with the egg for the picture.
Wow, that's impressive stuff. So people can access this cookbook?
They can. I mean, the hard copy of it is at the Scout Hut. He's in Troop 12 here,
right,
in Tupelo, which I think may be the oldest Boy Scout troop here, the one started by Paul Eason back in the 50s. But
okay,
it's also available on his mom's blog, which is Call Me PMAC, Call Me PMC.
Yes, okay. So check it out. That looks like some good eats in there. Cook of the week this week was a young lady named Candace Brown, and very interesting backstory. She really had no clue how to cook. Like when she got married, I laughed that her go-to side item was popcorn.
She said she just didn't realize that wasn't an appropriate side item, and so everything she made popcorn was the side. So they'd have frozen pizza and popcorn.
I could eat that every day, to be honest. But she's made some progress, hasn't she? What kind of sparked it there?
Well, she and her husband moved to D.C. for a couple of years,
uh-huh,
and she was just surrounded by foodies and good food, and that's when she got interested in cooking. And they moved to Tupelo in 2008, and shortly afterward, she was invited to join a cooking club with a group of ladies. And so every year they would cook from a different cookbook, and so she was trying new things and learning new techniques, and that's sort of how she honed her skills.
Yeah, yeah, and now she cooks basically every night, doesn't she? And it's very structured. I was reading, she's, you know, they got kids that are busy going places, and
right,
so, but they every night they have a routine, don't they?
They do. They do Bible study right before dinner,
mm-hmm,
all the children, and they sit down and they do that, and then they eat together. And both of the boys play baseball. The daughter is into theater. So she said sometimes her husband takes off early and they sit down at 4:45 in the afternoon and have dinner if that's when everybody's available. But it's really important to her. She grew up, her mom died when she was 12.
Yeah.
But she grew up on a farm, and it was, you worked in the field, and you worked hard, and you came in, and you sat down together, and you ate. And you ate what was put on your plate. You didn't say, I don't like that.
Yeah.
And so it's important for her to have that family around the table in the evenings, even if it's, 4:30 in the afternoon.
She did, having to eat vegetables all those years, kind of get turned off of them, though, didn't she?
She's just started eating vegetables again, and it was interesting. The day that I was there, she had a lot of family in, so she cooked maybe 7 or 8 dishes.
Wow.
And a lot of them were vegetables. And she said she made a squash dish and a butternut squash dish, and she said, I don't eat this. And I said, well, how do you know it's good if you don't even taste it? And she said, well, they tell me it's good. So I just can't imagine not tasting what I prepared and just going out on that limb.
Wow. Yeah, seems like she's really good at it now. Also, she made a pretty good parenting move that you make note of in the story when her kids were not enjoying some of her dishes or just didn't want to eat them.
She
just gave them new names.
Silly names.
Like meatloaf cake.
Right.
Awesome.
It does not sound good, but actually.
It's cake. It's good. It has
really
to be good.
What it is it's like beef Wellington, only it's like meatloaf Wellington. It's just, meatloaf wrapped in a pastry crust, but it looks like a cake when it cooks up. And so the kids thought it was cake, and so they
it's all about psychology with these young kids, trust me.
The edamame was, what was it, green jelly beans?
Yeah, that's what they call it. She called it.
Yeah. So whatever it takes.
Wow, that's pretty good stuff. And then quickly, let's talk about your column. We're talking about spaghetti. Not just any spaghetti?
Spaghetti a la carbonara.
I have no idea what that is.
It's spaghetti with bacon.
I'm in.
Well, I mentioned this is the fourth time that I've written about this dish, and the first time I wrote about it, it was from a cooking light recipe, and it had green peas in it, which you can put in it, but it wasn't my favorite. And then a few years later, I found a recipe, but it had literally 20 ingredients in it, and it just wasn't worth the effort. It wasn't that good. And then the last time I made it with pancetta. And I like pancetta, but to me, it just did not work in this recipe. I don't know if I got a bad batch or if it was just kind of gamey. So this time I found a different recipe. I don't know how many ingredients we have here, maybe 6 or 8. And there's no cream, but it was a very, very creamy dish. But spaghetti, a little bit of oil, a couple of pieces of bacon, garlic, eggs, Parmesan cheese, salt and pepper, and that's it. And it just turned out beautifully. And I didn't say this in the column, but I had made it for Charlie and me for dinner, and there were 2 servings left, and they were sitting in the skillet on the stove when son Patrick got home from work. And Patrick usually doesn't eat when he gets home from work at night because he's tired and he's hot and he's sweaty and he doesn't want to eat.
Yeah.
And he came in and he said, Mom, what's that on the stove? And I said, it's a new thing I made for dinner. Would you like some? And he said, yes, ma'am. Well, the next thing I know, he has taken both servings and piled it into a bowl, and he's sitting there eating it. And I said, well, Patrick, what do you think? And he said, this is what I want for my birthday meal. So must have been pretty good.
Nice. I've never thought of combining bacon with spaghetti, but
It's a classic Italian dish, and it's really easy. It came together in less than a half an hour. And it's, the thing is, these are ingredients that you have on hand. I mean, we always have pasta. We always have garlic and butter and oil and
bacon. I could even make this.
Yes.
Jenna, maybe.
Yes, you could. You could. If you can boil water for the pasta, you can make this dish.
I can boil water. I've only failed at that once or twice. Forget about it, and it's all gone.
Yeah.
That's happened.
Yeah.
We can find all this in Wednesday's food section, also at djournal.com. Jenna, always a pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you.
Be sure to look for the two sports podcasts we produce here at the Daily Journal. Prep Rally is a high school sports podcast with myself and Gene Phelps. New episodes air every Wednesday. You can find it in iTunes, your podcast apps, or at preprally.djournal.com. We took this week off. We plan to be back next Wednesday, so look for it then. Also, Ole Miss and Mississippi State fans, be sure to check out Double Coverage. It's a podcast with Ole Miss beat reporter Parrish Alford and MSU reporter Logan Lowry. New episodes each Thursday. The guys provide game previews, insight, commentary, and analysis on the Bulldogs and Rebels. Listen to that for free in iTunes, your podcast apps, or doublecoverage.djournal.com.
And they were back this week after a long break.
Yes, SEC Media Days.
Yeah, and I guess a little bit of a newsier episode between what they talked about Dan Mullen's appearance on Tuesday and then previewed Hugh Freeze's appearance, which has already happened now. But I would
talk about the Houston Nutt lawsuit.
Still a lot of context. So it's a weighty episode.
Yes, it is.
Also, wake up and get ready for your day with the Daily Journal's News Break, a quick summary of news, sports, weather, and everything else Northeast Mississippi in a 5-minute video. Shows will be posted every Monday through Friday at 7 a.m. You can watch them for free at any time at djournal.com, Facebook, YouTube, or the Daily Journal's mobile apps for Apple and Android devices. Stay informed on the latest happenings in your community in an easily digestible format.
We're joined now by Chief Photographer Thomas Wells.
Good morning,
Welcome
gentlemen.
Welcome back. How you doing?
Good to be back.
Hey, by the way, the photography staff, along with the rest of the new staff, did pretty well with the MPA Awards?
That is correct.
Yeah, the state contest they have every year, and so were you and Adam Robinson and Lauren
Wood.
We did really well.
I think we won.
Adam cleaned up, didn't he?
He won four firsts. He's on vacation this week, and I texted him. I said, hey, you want the good news or the bad news? And, of course, he said, good news. I said, well, good news is, first thing, the bad news, you only won four awards at MPA. The good news is they're all first places. So, we won 11 of 23, so we won almost half.
Nice.
Out of the eight categories.
Yeah,
so
we're going up against some bigger papers, too.
Yeah, it's just us and the Sun Herald and the Clarion Ledger. It's just the three of us.
That's right.
But we're the only papers that have staff photographers left, pretty much, too.
I know. and some photos you took recently.
Yep.
Speaking of, the In Focus photo essay that we do every Monday, you had it this week. Went out to Ballard Park and got photos of some guys getting the fields ready for this recent USSSA tournament they had.
That is correct.
The weekend before last they held it.
Yeah, weekend before last, and so I spent 3 days out there with them, believe it or not. That's how long it takes them to get those fields really manicured for something people don't realize. And that's just the four fields for the 12-year-old. That doesn't include the T-ball fields or the little 9-10-year-old fields. So they spent literally, it was eight of them, 40-hour work week. So you're talking almost 400 man hours to get those fields ready.
Goodness. Yeah, I mean, they usually keep those fields in pretty darn good shape. My son plays out there at rec ball, and that season's been over for a few weeks.
Yep.
But they still have tournaments going on there throughout the summer, don't they?
Correct. USSSA, and they have some Dizzy Dean stuff. They used to. I don't know if they still do Dizzy Dean or not. But, the USSSA stuff's really a big deal because it's a big money maker for them.
Yeah,
with all the kids coming in, because teams are anywhere from 9 to 15 kids on a team, and each team pays $350 to enter the tournament, and then you have all the hotel, and there's 3 days guaranteed usually, so it's a couple nights in hotels.
Explain for people who aren't familiar, USSSA, it's teams from out of state coming in.
Yeah, well, it's a nationwide travel baseball association with teams, aging groups from 6 years old all the way up to 18. And they break it down just like you would major leagues. They have an A ball, a double A, a triple A, and a major division. And so as you progress as a player or as a team, you get bumped up to the next level.
This kind of thing has always kind of fascinated me as far as like prepping fields and making everything look so good, like especially the precision they have to have with just like doing the USSSA logo.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you have to have some kind of artistic talent on thing, because I remember when I was in high school, there were these softball fields. My dad and a friend of his had started a softball league in Louisiana where I was living. I think it was a U.S. – I can't remember what it was called.
Oh, like a USTA or something like
– Yeah, but
US
it was
– softball, yeah, like USSA or something like
something.
That.
I forget what it was called exactly. But anyway, so they had some fields that I had, since my dad was like the commissioner, I had to go like help line the fields and whatnot. There's some pretty crooked foul lines. I'm just gonna say I tried real hard crooked to get them straight.
From a crooked bad lock.
I used the string and everything and went real slow and just
it's hard.
So I have a lot of respect for people who can do that.
And Justin, the guy that's painting the big AAA logo on the hillside, he jokingly found out how big the letters in Mississippi State are in the end zones and made these 4 feet bigger. just so they could say we had the biggest letters in Mississippi painted.
Nice.
But yeah, he said it took him about 2 weeks to lay it all out and to map it out on the hillside to get it straight and get the lettering done.
Yeah, and then that's one thing painting everything, but even just making sure the field, the dirt, the grass, and everything else looks pristine.
Yeah,
that's a whole other ball game there. I did a story a few years ago on a kid from Mississippi State that was. Spent a summer on the Milwaukee Brewers grounds crew and really got some cool insight into what all that entails to keep the field looking that good.
Yeah, not only just the time, but the money, like the Toro lawnmower, they're called the Rollmaster they use in that photograph that Mr. Gurley's driving. That thing is about $60,000 just to cut the grass out there.
Good heavens.
Yeah, $60,000, and they want to buy the new one because that one's almost 10 years old now. They want to buy the new one; it's almost 80 to replace it.
If I'm paying $60,000, I'm going to get more than 10 years out of it.
Well, not only that, it ought to cut the grass by itself. It ought to have GPS and like a drone driving it for that kind of money.
That's more than some luxury cars cost.
But that's how they do those cool patterns in the outfield and because it lays the grass over and all that. It kind of rolls. It really does. It rolls. It has the the blades aren't like a regular blade. They have the old-fashioned rolling blades like you would push mow.
Right, right.
Yeah, that's basically how it cuts the grass. So,
this is maybe only slightly off topic. I've always wondered, haven't looked it up, like way back in the day when baseball was still in its infancy, how good condition were the fields in?
They couldn't have been that good.
Couldn't have been. Like today, anyway. I kind of wonder what methods they used to at least keep the – the dirt and the grass looking presentable. Presentable.
You'd also hear a lot of stories like when Ty Cobb would play and they would do like intentional things like water down the infield so that the bunts would stay or let the grass go high for infield hits and so forth.
Yeah. Imagine that was a very labor intensive process to get the grass cut back then.
I mean, I was intrigued because, I've played on those fields. I've coached on those fields for years and years and years with my son. They edge the baselines.
Yeah.
Then they come back with basically an old hand scraper and scrape all the roots out to get that perfectly straight line.
Really.
And they have to do that probably 6 or 7 times a year just because of the runners they can't control.
Yeah.
It's just the constant maintenance. Even when there's no games being played on those fields, they have to keep.
Oh yeah.
Keep that stuff going. It's just. It's crazy.
I would not have the patience or skill to do that kind of work.
And nobody ever sees them because usually when they're doing it, everybody's at work and they're there from 8 to 5 and, nothing's being done. When they just, people just think you just show up and the fields are always marked and chalked and the bases are always painted.
And those fields, I've seen over the years, some rec league fields that don't look that good. These fields at Ballard Park have always looked really good to me.
Yeah. We've played on a lot of – when I played coach travel ball, there's 3 or 4 complexes around this area that compete on this level as far as pristine fields. And this is being the newest one is probably the best one of all of them.
Oh, yeah. And these fields aren't that old. I want to say they built them sometime after I moved here, which was 02.
Wesley was – his 9-10-year season was his first year. So it's been – they're almost 10 years old now, believe it or not.
Yeah, wow.
Because, it was a 9-10-year-old year, and he was 10. So, he's 19 now. So, almost 10 years ago when those fields were completed.
Yeah, I'm up.
And they didn't let anybody play on them for the first year. They sat there and let them mature, not being touched for the first year. You couldn't even go out there and take batting practice. They kept the gates locked, and you couldn't even ask to get on the fields.
Wow.
So,
they do a good job with it. And y'all can find these photos from Thomas and Monday's Journal. They're also at djournal.com. Kind of cool behind the scenes look at those guys. Thomas, thanks for your time, man.
Thank y'all. Until next month.
Yes, sir. And be sure to watch the Daily Journal's Capitol View webcast each Monday afternoon at djournal.com. Capitol Bureau Chief Bobby Harrison provides commentary and analysis on all the issues being debated in Jackson. You can watch live on Monday afternoons around 2 o'clock or catch the replay later in the day. The 2017 session is now over, but Bobby continues to provide perspective and analysis on all the news coming out of the state capitol.
Scott Morris in the studio this morning discussing the movie he saw this week, Spider-Man Homecoming, the sixth Spider-Man film in 15 years?
Something, man.
Is that right? The third reboot? Or I guess the second reboot.
There's three and two and one.
And then
one,
this would be so, six, yeah. So.
And then I guess he did appear in Civil War, Spider-Man did.
That's true.
But that wasn't really, he wasn't carrying it, but still, he was
so,
there.
So he got as many movies in 17 years as Superman got in 30, by my math. That'd be, what, 2001, 2002? Yeah. Did they do it right this time?
You saw it.
I did, but I'm asking you.
All right, well, here's the weird thing, is that what pressure there must have been to tell this with that press, with all those other memories. I mean, maybe not everyone who's seen this movie will have seen those, but I think they did get it right. I think they went in their own direction in so many different ways. I mean, so we know that Peter Parker was bitten by a radioactive spider, so we don't necessarily have to see that in this movie. I mean, so they just skip the entire origin story. In fact, except during one scene, he tells his friend.
Like, you know, one throwaway line of dialogue. Yeah.
Yeah, I got bitten by a spider. Could I fight? Is the spider? No, the spider's dead.
Yeah.
So a nice little joke. And so, and also Aunt May has always been a dowdy type of individual. Even when Sally Field played her, she was somebody toward grandparent age. And Marissa Tomei is... technically, she could be a grandparent at this point, but she does not look like she could be a grandparent.
I read an interview with Watts, is that the director's name? I think so, who said that in discussions on what they wanted to do to...
John Watts,
to set this apart, they wanted to make her more of a big sister than an aunt.
Yeah.
Which is, I think they accomplished.
Well, they make these... and she's also the authority figure, so and I guess they said big sister, but I see like her position is more like... a substitute mother than like a great aunt has been played before, you know, someone much, much younger than that situation. They also make the, so Spider-Man played by Tom Holland, he's new to being Spider-Man. He's got a new suit. He doesn't really understand how to operate. And so Tony Stark is trying to mentor him through the story, trying to say, and Tony Stark uses the old line, how about you just be a friendly neighborhood Spider-Man, which I think has been in the trailers. And what's fun is they use this Seinfeldian, I think of it as Seinfeldian, because it was always about putting a character, that show, in a very embarrassing comical situation. Mm-hmm. And Peter Parker and Spider-Man keep ending up in these situations. And I just feel for the guy. I just think, you know, he's trying to go to school. He's 15 years old trying to go to school. And you know he's going to make this promise. But you know he's also trying to stop these terrible weapons made from alien tech from being out on the streets. And so you know he can't keep those promises. And you just keep seeing it. You just keep kind of feeling for the guy. And then also a guy I felt for was the villain of the movie, who's played by Michael Keaton, plays the Vulture. And his story makes perfect sense. I mean, he takes it to a level I don't agree with, but I couldn't hate him. I couldn't dislike him. I mean, the whole time
Dislike Keaton. Anything he does.
maybe that's it.
Yeah,
but
I think
also,
that's part of it for me. But
Keaton's been Batman, and he played in Birdman, played the actor who played a superhero.
Yeah.
So he spent a lot of his professional time thinking about what it means to wear a mask and to have these two identities, and it's just seamless, his scenes with Spider-Man and with Peter Parker and how all that goes. And it's a cool story. I give it an A.
You gave it an A. Like we said, this is the third time they've tried to get this right now, I guess, after the early 2000s. And then they rebooted not several years back, but it hasn't been, what, 2012? Was that when they...
And that wasn't long. I didn't look up that. But, you know, the first two Tobey Maguire's, in fact, the second one was one of my favorites with Doc Ock. The third one, I kind of lost me a bit. But
I think it lost everybody.
Yeah.
I think when he started dancing in the streets, everybody was like...
Yeah, and I can't even watch it when it comes on. I said,
it's a great comedy if you watch it as a...
That's like Transformers movie.
Yeah, there you go.
That type of comedy. But Marvel... Sony had, like, I guess, bought the rights to the character, had the rights to the character, so Sony can do whatever they want to.
Yeah.
And Sony tried a lot. And now, and I had heard that one of the frustrations of the original Avengers movie was they were in the process of negotiations then, mm-hmm. trying to get Spider-Man to have one appearance in that, to kind of so he didn't show up again until Civil War.
Yeah.
Several Avengers movies down the line. But Marvel now kind of has this story, has Spider-Man in its universe.
Yeah. Even though Sony still owns him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Sony's probably cashing more checks than they would otherwise. Oh, yeah. Yeah. And getting more accolades.
It worked well for them. They get to be along for the ride and
exactly.
and have their name on it, and Marvel's doing the heavy lifting.
One thing I found very interesting about this is there are one, two, three, there are six people listed as screenwriting credits for this.
Yeah.
A whole cadre of people. And the movie just seems to fit together so well that they have that many people going over it. I mean, you can see like Death by Committee or Life by Committee.
Usually you have that many people on a film and
somebody's coming to fix something that somebody else messed up.
Yeah. So it doesn't always turn out good. But here I think it did, and that they managed to do something. I think one of the reasons he didn't work so well before is because you would watch, especially that last Andrew Garfield.
Yeah.
Those were coinciding with everything else we were seeing on the Marvel side of things, and it was lacking.
Yeah, and the last one, they were trying so hard to pack all these other characters in so they could have an expanded universe of Spider-Man to have these villains and other people out there. And they just packed too much. And so they were trying, they weren't, now the Marvel people, they also pack a lot of things in.
Yeah.
It's just, I don't know, they do it a little bit more seamlessly so far than others have been able to do it. And in this story, I think they pulled a lot of stuff out. This is really kind of this story, there's a lot of conflict between trying to go to high school by day and trying to save the world by night. Mm-hmm. It's just inherent. And they didn't have to add a whole lot to it. They stuck with that. There's this kind of crucial dichotomy between, you know, who he is and who he feels responsible to be. And we all feel that, you know, in some way about how we spend our time, what we're going to do. And if you had great power, would you have great responsibility to use it? But also, you got a Spanish test you got to study for.
Well, one of the things that I really liked that they did different, like the Aunt May thing, making her younger, and the little thing. They didn't do the whole Uncle Ben thing. They didn't do the whole spider. We didn't have to sit through another. If I had to sit through Uncle Ben getting shot again, I just can't do it again.
Exactly.
But one thing I really liked is in all of those other five movies, his powers are a burden. He's constantly like burdened by having to be. And this kid was watching the clock in school, ready to go eat Spider-Man. As soon as 3 o'clock hit, he was wanting to go put the suit on and go swing around.
He loves the powers, and they're an inconvenience at times. Yeah. But he loves being Spider-Man.
But he wasn't like,
I'm cursed.
Yeah, I really enjoyed that spin on it. It's playing at Malco and Cinemark in Tupelo.
It's playing also at
everywhere.
Real 4 and
it's in your living room right now, so turn it on.
You can pre-order it now on your... For a digital device.
Low price. Scott, thanks for coming on.
Oh, happy to do it.
Well, it's Friday now that Scott and Jen are gone. I guess I can tell you what's going on in the entertainment world. Of course, today's centerpiece from Scene yesterday was on Down on Main, which was the last night in Fair Park. Papa Molly performed. He's performed with the great members of the Grateful Dead, with Willie Nelson, and he's a huge musician, so it was cool to get to talk to him. Of course, this is the 8th year of Down on Main summer concert series, 3 concerts throughout the summer during Fair Park that are free and open to the public. So that's a cool thing that they do every year for the citizens of Tupelo. You've got more chances to see acts coming up soon. Kingfish and Mr. Sip will be performing on August 10th, and Jeff Crosby and the Refugees and George McConnell on September 14th. Fair Park. So this weekend you can also catch it's the 2017 Slugburger Festival in Corinth going on, so that's the 30th anniversary, I believe, of that one, with live music throughout the weekend. And of course,
Joey Chestnut coming.
Slugburgers. I can neither confirm nor deny whether or not Joey Chestnut will be.
He came with the last 2 years, something like that.
I didn't see his name on anything, but that doesn't mean that he's not going to be there, of course.
But, I mean, he has come recently, is what I was just saying.
Concert Saturday night at the Link Center featuring neo-soul, jazz, and contemporary folk music with Michaela Harrison, Joy Clark, and Monica McIntyre. That's going to be at 7:30. Tickets are $12 in advance. That would be today only, and $15 at the door. 690-4011 for tickets, or link-center.org. Center is C-E-N-T-R-E. And Dwight Yoakam at the Bancorp South Arena on Sunday.
That's a guy I want to see live someday.
Well, you realize he's going to be right, like
yeah, that costs money, man.
It's like $20. They're $20 tickets.
Yeah. If I had $20, I'd go see him. One of my favorite albums is one of his live albums from like 20 years ago, 20-something years ago. I'm just a big fan of his. Anyway.
Apparently not.
I'm a big broke fan of his.
You want me to lend you $20 so you can go see Dwight?
Nah, be fine. I'm probably busy anyway.
I'm going to do it anyway. And then next weekend at TCT Off-Broadway, you can see the show Love, Loss, and What I Wore. Five women doing monologues about articles of clothing and the stories that they attribute with them. Pretty cool show. It's written by the screenwriter that did You've Got Mail and Sleepless in Seattle and movies like that. So that's July 20th through the 22nd, 7:30 p.m. at TCT Off-Broadway on East Franklin Street behind Bancorp South Arena, 844-1935 for $20 tickets on that. And that's going to do it for today's show.
Nice.
Yep. That's how it works.
Good show. Really good show.
We say things and really? You going to pull a Carson out on us?
No, that was my... That was my Ed Sullivan.
Sullivan. Why did I say Johnny Carson? I knew that. We got a really big show. The Beatles.
I did not know that.
I did not know that.
Actually, my only Johnny Carson impression is impersonating Danny Carvey, impersonating Johnny Carson.
Oh. I thought maybe you were going to do Karnak. Saturday Night Fever.
Then there's Carsinio.
Yeah.
That was a good one. Woot woot.
Woot
guys.
Woot. Find us online, memo.djournal.com. Also, the stories discussed today you can find in your daily journal from this week or online at djournal.com. The podcast is on Twitter at djournalmemo, and the newspaper is on Twitter as well for breaking news and headlines and links to all these stories. Follow along at djournalnow. At djournalnow? No, just the one.
Just the one at. Djournalnow. Not two ats.
At djournal. Those are those walkers from Star Wars. At-ats. You put two of those symbols together, and that's what that means.
No. Okay.
See you on Wednesday.
Wednesday.
Be back.
See you then.
Bye.